chapter 4, in the presence of God and of Christ Jesus. Here, very rare, twice I can think of, but maybe that's all, Paul hardly ever talks about Jesus as the judge, but he does. In the presence of God and of Christ Jesus, who is to judge the living and the dead. 2 Corinthians 5:10 also has it. What's it mean to judge? So this is quite important. The image is clear to all of us. Someone, the king, in their situation, having heard the evidence, had to make a judgment. A judgment just means make a judgment. And God's judgment, of course, will be true. It'll be real. It'll be in accordance with the truth, the way things really are. So there's nothing wrong with that. God simply makes a judgment. God doesn't then punish. See, we have a judgment. Well, the punishment is what we're already, we punish ourselves. Punishment is what happens. If I gouge my eyes out, I can't see. Don't blame the judge. He just says, you gouged your eyes out. End of judgment. Fact, reality. The punishment, if we use that word, and it's not a good word, is simply the effects of what we do. That's all it is. It's not an added extra. It's just what happens. If I hurt you, you're hurt. I hurt myself, I'm hurt. If I say no to God and block off love, I'm not being loved. If I pulled the blinds down, the room's in the dark. Do you get me? It's all what we do to each other and to ourselves. God, but Jesus is the judge. But that's a beautiful thing to say. That's a stunning thing to say. Because if we think God is going to be the judge, and God is so vague to many, certainly to the people of Jesus' contemporaries, that they might think, oh, model this man. But if Jesus is the judge, hello, wait a minute. Woman caught in adultery, do you know the story? I do not condemn you. Don't forget the next line, go and sin no more. The other woman who comes in, her sins must have been forgiven because she loves so much. Jesus judged her and said, she's loving beautifully. That's what he judged, that's what he saw, that's what it is. He judged, so she must have been forgiven. So Jesus, with his human heart and human experience, knows exactly who we are. And if I am one who doesn't care about truth, doesn't care about children, doesn't care about other people's lives, am greedy, unjust, and blocked off from love, and of my own volition and such, well, the judge will have to say, I do not know you. And that's hell. But our judge is the at least it's truthful, so it's, I mean, at least it's truthful. He sees what is and makes a judgment accordingly. So that's meant to be a statement of great joy for everybody, because we won't be misunderstood by Jesus. Therefore, we are not misunderstood by God. He knows. And that's not a thing that should bring fear, it should bring relief. Because most people are doing their best, I think. I may not be doing my best, but I may be. And other people can misjudge all that, but God doesn't. So we're relaxing here in the presence of one who knows through love. And in view of his appearing, question we had earlier, his parousia, his being, and his kingdom coming of the reign of God everywhere, I solemnly urge you, proclaim the message. Proclaim Keruzzo, Kerux, the judge, the herald. Announce it. Tell people who God is. Don't stop doing that. Be alert whether the time is favorable or unfavorable. Don't fit yourself to what people might think. Say it, be it, tell them. You never know, just say it, just be it. Convince, rebuke, encourage. Encourage is parakaleo, be an instrument of the call of the risen Christ. With the utmost patience in teaching. Patience, We've done this hundreds of times, but I've got to do it again because you can never tell from the English what it means. There are two words in patience in Greek. Hupomone means bearing up under a weight. You stay where you are even though it's just about crushing you. That's one word for patience. That's not the word used here. This is makrothumia, meaning it's a positive thing. It's not patient here. It's continuing to love even when it gets hard. That's probably the quickest way to put makrothumia. Keep long-suffering is where it's often translated. Sometimes it's translated slow to anger, but that's a very negative way of putting a positive virtue. With the utmost patience in teaching. In other words, keep teaching. If you keep getting rejected and no one's listening, don't let it stop. Just keep doing it, because it's about love. For the time is coming when people will not put up with sound doctrine, but having itching ears, they'll accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own desires. Wouldn't that be terrible? To want something to be true and to go to someone who said it was true. I mean, who's helping who? Wouldn't that be just absolutely dreadful to hear your own thoughts echoed by a teacher? So you like the teacher because he's saying what you like to hear. Wouldn't it be good to hear something that was true and made me change my mind or expand my mind? Or don't you want to go to someone who'll not say you're great, but this is worth doing and you're able to do it and you do it? Of course you would. But it's dreadful to have all this other stuff going on, but it still does happen, doesn't it? I want to hear what I want to hear, and I'll go around maybe to different people and I'll finally find a priest who'll agree with me. And so what's happened now is I'm now stuck in the rut that I was always in because someone said it's okay to be in this rut. I know it's not all right to be in the rut because I feel I'm in a rut, but someone said, oh, it's all right. It's not all right. And you want someone to show you how to get out of it or maybe explain what something about it, but to give... The truth is all that matters, and we've got to be committed to it. These people will not put up with sound doctrine. Having itching ears, they'll accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own desires and turn away from listening to the truth and wander away into myths. And you belong, and I belong, to a culture that's nearly given up on truth, nearly given up on it. I don't know any country in the world, I'm getting angry now, I better watch it. Australia and Iraq, the Australian people, on the whole, know we were lied to, and what they're saying is, oh, we've moved on. We've left that behind, we've moved on. We're in another world now. In other words, they're so disengaged from truth, politics, people being murdered in the world, big reality, that people just go on and then vote for someone who'll give them a pay package. I don't know what they vote for, because they often don't do that either. But that's the culture we're in. So if we're not committed to the truth, like stranglehold on it, and go for it, we're no good to anybody. And we've got to be committed to the truth, and we've got to say it in season, out of season. But I've never been... England is trying to do something about it. Half, or a third, I don't know how America works itself out, but a good pile of Americans are really doing something about it. And we, Australians, have moved on. That is so shocking. Turn away from listening to and wander away to myths. The emperors in the ancient world had to go to a lot of trouble and a lot of expense to keep the populace happy in Rome. Rome had a million population when there was only 5 million in the whole of Europe. That's the estimation. So it was an extraordinary city. But to keep this mass of people, two-thirds of whom were slaves, kind of from just tearing the place down, they had to have bread and circuses, and you've heard about it. So they put the big circus on and everybody gets distracted and happy. We've got a television set and we've got football and I don't know what else we've got, but that seems to keep nearly everybody off the streets. So we're not going to revolt. We're not going to say we're not going to have this happen to these children of Iraqis and their mothers for 18 months. We're not going to listen to our ministers tell them they're safe and secure on some island in the middle of the bloody Pacific where they're really just despairing, psychologically wounded. We're going to rise up. And we've got to rise up. We've got to say we're not going to put up with this anymore if we're committed to the truth. As for you, he says to Timothy, always be sober, moderate, endure suffering, do the work of an evangelist, and carry out your ministry fully. And then, as for me, it's a beautiful ending to this part of it, as for me, I'm already being poured out as a libation. You know that all through the pagan world and Jewish world, blood was really sacred. Blood was something, it was something to do with the divine. It was life, you know, they knew that. If you lose your blood, you lose your life. So the Jews never ate it. And you couldn't just get an animal and strangle it with the blood inside and eat it. You still can't. Kosher food, you couldn't do that. That's because life is in the blood. So what they would do is, the Jews would pour the blood onto the ground. You know, it would go into the Mother Earth, as it were. That's the Jewish idea. And then the rest of it could be burnt, and then the perfume would go up to the gods. They were actually just following ancient, pre-Israelite, universal customs, where the world thought there were all these Olympian gods, or whatever name they gave them, you know, up in the sky, that caused thunder, lightning, the stars, all that. And then there were the Chthonic gods, the gods of death, the gods of the underworld, the gods that... So you had to keep them happy as well, because you're walking on gods and you've got gods, and there's gods everywhere. People living basically in a certain terror, fear of the elements and of the gods. Christianity came into the middle of all that and told us that God is love. I mean, and then I'm going to weep now. My emotions mustn't be too good today. You know, and so many people present Christianity as a mindless, narrow... Can you see? You forgive me for feeling that's absolutely terrible. And God becomes a petulant... Enough. Christianity is all about God is love, for God's sake. So love people and welcome them and consider them sacred and invite them. And it's universal and it isn't petty and it isn't us and it isn't anti-this or anti-that. It's just for the truth, that's what it's about. So where am I up to? Anyone know? Oh, yeah. These gods are up there, and there were all these gods, so they had to pour the blood down. So the bloodthirsty gods who took the dead would keep us alive. They wouldn't want me if I gave them the blood of my goats. I might live another few years. Help us. Well, Paul's life is being poured out. He's 70-odd. He's in jail. It's going terribly. He's lonely. He's sick, presumably. And he's got martyrdom just around the corner. Well, my time of departure has come. And he doesn't seem to be expecting now, as he did 20 years earlier in 1 Thessalonians, that he and others around him may still be alive when the parousia happens. No, it's not like that now. He's matured and he knows, I have fought the good fight. He's assuring, and Timothy didn't need assurance, I fought the good fight. I finished the race. I've kept the faith. He said earlier, I know the one in whom I've put my trust. I've kept the faith. From now on there is reserved from me the crown of righteousness. Crown was never thinking that New Testament crown meaning like kings and queens wear. It's always the crown the laurel or whatever it was that you got when you won the Olympic Games or something like that. It was a crown of victory after an effort in the stadium. It's made of leaves and flowers. And the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me on that day. It's fairly vague now, that day. And not only on me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing.